Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mdiwa Gabaza, and for today, we are getting into the realm of education and how technology is helping, you know, education to move forward. It's been quite an important topic in the last couple of months, especially with so many learners unable to attend classes at the moment, and there is a company that has decided to take an impact investing route when it comes to education. So we're going to be joined by Riaz Mullah, who is the founder and CEO of Hyperion Dev, which is a tech education company that was founded about 8 to 9 years ago. And the company says that it exists with one goal, that is to close the global tech skills gap by enabling education that is an accessible alternative to traditional university degrees. Riaz, greetings to you.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on the show.
I think we've just run through, you know, the high level of what Hyperion Dev actually does. Could you maybe, as we begin the discussion, give us some insight into some of the nitty-gritties behind the company?
Sure. We are an online education provider. So we help people who are working professionals, not in a tech career, study part-time online to become software developers, web developers, data scientists. And we also help people who are just out of university or school, who are looking to study full-time for up to 1 year to also transition into a tech career. And overall, a lot of people come to us because they don't want to do a full 3 or 4 year long computer science degree. They want to get the tech skills they need quickly and get interviews quickly and just increase their salary quickly by becoming a software developer or becoming closer to tech in a company. And, you know, in that way, we operate in quite a different model from a traditional university or a college, in that, you know, all of our programs are set up around outcomes. So how can we teach you these skills quickly but deeply, and then get you in front of interviews with companies and get you hired quickly? So we've spent, you know, nearly a decade building a network of companies that hire our graduates, but also programs that are very accelerated and very kind of rigorous in how they teach you not theoretical concepts, but more practical, you know, how to build this website, how to learn this tech tool, how to prepare for a technical interview. And that's really taking off in the last few years. We've seen amazing growth during COVID, but even before then, you know, we were almost doubling our students every few months. And yeah, it's been an exciting journey. I started this organization when I was a student at university studying computer science. And we were kind of a community of other university students trying to teach our peers how to code better. And we basically got so good at doing it that people from outside the universities came to us and said, hey, we'll pay you to train us in this, you know. You know, big research companies and corporates came to us. And it was in 2017, we got some funding from Facebook and Google, who said, you know, we want you to expand these tech skills in Southern Africa. And over the years, we've become, you know, the biggest tech education provider in the country in this space.
And I like the fact that you guys have gone into, you know, this critical area, because I think once upon a time, when it came to technology, all the buzzwords were around coding. You know, everyone needs to be a coder, everyone needs to be a programmer. But now it really does sound as if there is scope for people that want to explore the other sides, you know, particularly around the data science, the analytics, and things like that. So with that in mind, I'm sure, you know, I know that companies tend not to, you know, like talking about their competitors, but this does seem a bit of a niche space. How do you guys contrast yourselves from other academies like Explore Data Science Academy?
Sure, good question. I think that, first of all, we're a for-profit organization. You'll see some institutions out there that are non-profits. For example, We Think Code. And you know, that may sound like a bad thing at first, but if you think about it, if you build a business, and customers pay you to take your service out of their own pockets. And we know our students and customers go through a lot of hardship to be able to raise the funds to study with us. You know, we offer a huge number of scholarships too, but by and large, our customer is the student. That means we have to provide value for money, we have to provide outcomes, and we have to make those students happy. And I mean, if you just take a look at our reviews online, but even something called Net Promoter Score, where we go to our thousands of students every week and we ask them, how likely are you to recommend us? We have the highest rating in this country in the space of tech education in terms of Net Promoter Score, and one of the highest in terms of public reviews. So, you know, if you're going to judge an educational institution, I think you need to think about the context of, you know, did this student actually pay for their course? And is the review they're giving in the context of, you know, measuring the value for money? And if, you know, they spent 40,000 rand on a course, did they practically get a new job where they earn back that 40,000 rand in just a few months? So you'll see those kind of outcomes out of what we're doing. Whereas you may see some providers that offer these programs for free, but you have to be from a certain demographic, a certain age, you have to sign a contract and work for maybe a year or two on an intern. And that's a very different type of value proposition. It's incredibly important, but it's not something that is applicable for all learners. We focus on people who are wanting to make that career change and who may be working at the moment or may come from any kind of background. But I think that's a key difference. Another key difference is we are one of the few primarily or fully online education providers. We started off doing fully online 8 years ago. Around the time Get Smarter was starting out and Coursera. And so we built a learning experience that is very hard to build. You know, delivering courses online effectively is much more than just putting up some videos and having some email support. It's about how does somebody interact with the course content online? How do they write code online and get that reviewed or graded? How do they interact with their peers? And we went super far on this. You know, the first thing I did when I started this company 8 years ago was I started writing code to build that online platform. And over the years, it's had nearly 100 software developers work to improve it and make that learning experience real tangible. And that's what leads to basically a very high quality online learning experience. To my knowledge, we don't have anybody else in not just South Africa, but Africa, who's gone as far as us in building an online education platform for tech learning. Some of the technology we use is so unique that some of the people you would think are our competitors in international markets, they actually are our clients. Through our sister brand, Cogrammar, we provide them with the technology and the people to actually deliver their own online courses in coding in the US and European markets. So, you know, if we're so good at that, that some of these international brands have to use us, I think it speaks very strongly to our quality and our kind of market lead in South Africa.
Well, it certainly sounds like you guys are offering something that, you know, seems to be unique in the current market. And when I was just doing some research earlier on about your business, one of the things I couldn't help but to notice was the fact that the numbers for your company tend to be quoted in different currencies, sort of speaking to some type of an international sort of operation. And from what you've said, there is that international exposure. So I want to bring it back to something that you said earlier on about the fact that you guys got the attention of Facebook and Google when you were first starting out. Was that Facebook and Google here in South Africa, or was it more on an international level? How did you get, you know, their attention?
Well, I used to work at Google. I used to work as a product manager in the search team. When I was at Google, I think I'm allowed to talk about this. You know, Google was running some computer science education projects. And when I left Google, they approached us to say, look, we are trying to find a way to improve teaching of computing and programming in South Africa. And we think the problem is around teaching. You know, when you deliver a course in coding, you need to have a teacher that's really good. And a big problem with this space is that there are actually not that many people that have trained to teach coding. And so one of the first things we worked with Google and what they funded us to do was how do we create the role of a coding teacher? And over the years, that's actually evolved into our Cogrammar brand, where we train people to be really high quality coding teachers that we then deploy through our Hyperion Dev courses and through our partner client courses internationally. So that was Google's interest, and it's a very tough thing. And again, I think it's a big differentiator, the fact we have people who are not just teaching on the side or people who are doing this as a hobby or for a little bit more money. They're professionals who have chosen for their full-time career to be an expert technical instructor. In terms of Facebook around that time was also looking to fund tech startups in Africa. And they ran a competition to fund five tech startups, and they chose two to get, about $250,000 in funding. We were very lucky to be selected by Facebook as kind of the top prize winner in social impact. So they thought we were the most socially impactful tech startup that had applied for this funding in Africa. And I think the idea that Facebook liked was the fact we were connecting people. We were training teachers in South Africa to teach coding and then connecting them to students in the US through these international partners and through some of our own Hyperion courses, which we do deliver in other markets outside of South Africa. So I think that idea and the concept was very empowering for people in the region, and just the idea, South Africa or Africa is behind in tech skills. Well, actually, we're not. We're so good, we'll supply the teachers to the rest of the world.
I really want to explore this issue of, teaching the teachers and how do you actually get the best teachers that are going to impart skills like coding to, kids and young people in Africa and other parts of the world as you guys are doing. But before that, maybe, on this issue of funding and investing, I understand that you guys have an impact investing opportunity that you guys have going. I'm really trying to understand this 200 rand or £10. I can, get into some type of a bursary scheme. What's actually going on?
Yeah, so basically, the short story is that we have raised $2 million in funding. That's around 30 million rand. And we're now doing something called a crowdfund, where anybody can go onto a website and invest a small amount of money into us, from as little as 200 rand to as much as 500,000 rand. And this is all done online with a credit card. And so we're giving people the chance to join international investors, including Black Coffee's venture capital fund, Flight Mode Digital, to join these investors in making an investment in us. And that is linked to a scholarships campaign. So the more money we raise in the crowdfund, the more scholarships we're going to be giving away to people who can't afford to take our courses and come from disadvantaged backgrounds in South Africa. So as we speak, I think we've already received hundreds of applications for those scholarships. We're giving away up to 3.5 million rand in value of scholarships to those people. And we have already, nearly 1,000 people who have registered for early access to invest in the crowdfund. So that early access will close just on Monday. And so there's a website you can sign up to get first access to make a small investment in us.
When it comes to actually funding, sort of like a per student cost, I remember from previous reading that they say it takes about, to do a year-long course in data science and stuff like that, it usually costs about 100,000 rand or so. What type of pricing do you guys have for your courses? Like, what are those costs like?
Our most affordable course is around 20,000 rand upfront, and our most expensive course is around 70,000 rand. Obviously, we have payment plans, we have loan providers, so people are able to get a loan from a bank like Standard Bank to study with us. But these scholarships are full scholarships, so we'll be providing everything to the students. The students who apply go through have gone through an application process, recording a video of why they want to learn tech skills, and you know we do some checks to check that they don't have the means to study with us. You know, in a perfect world, we want to actually be able to give our education away for free to everybody, and that's something we used to do 8 years ago. But the bottom line is, if you want to make a great social impact, building a very good, valuable, profitable business not just creates employment, but it creates a lot of opportunities to then do impact drives like the one we're doing today. And I think what we've learned over time is this is actually an amazing way to make good, sustainable impact in our country.
Speaking of impact investing, when you guys, you know, whether it's the 20,000 rand course or the 70,000, when a student pays that amount of money, or when a funder or whoever comes in, are they paying the 100% cost for themselves, or is part of it maybe subsidized by corporate partners that are looking for some of the skills that you guys are developing?
At the moment, it's not subsidized by corporate partners. It's something we would love to do. I think that you can think of it being an indirect subsidization, because we build pathways for people to get employed quickly after graduating, so they can start earning quickly or earning higher than they were before to offset that cost. So you can think of it that way. We want to focus on doing that very well, rather than building an education model where it's dependent on corporate partners. Because some of the problems you'll have there is, it's amazing to get a company like, say, a bank to partially or fully fund, say, 200 places for students. But often they will also require that the program is changed, or the education quality is changed, or certain tailoring is done. And that compromises the quality of our program. We want to have one very amazing web development program that we know is the best, that we know sets up the chance of every graduate being employed as much as possible, not just at one company, but many companies, because many things happen in the hiring space. A bank that you design a program for, by the time your students graduate, the bank can end up retrenching a lot of people, and they're suddenly no longer hiring, and you suddenly have graduates from a program that's so specialized that they can't easily interview or get work elsewhere. When we train people in a web development course, we're training them in the discipline of web development, which allows them to be web developers in different programming languages at different companies and in different contexts. And I think that's quite critical to be an effective education provider.
No, it certainly does, because I think if the last year has shown us anything at all, it's that you know, the stability in some of the in some companies is not always assured, and in some cases, someone might take such a course and decide to go entrepreneurial route and either start an app of their own or something like that. So I can definitely see the flexibility being useful. Perhaps on the last point, you know, when it comes to the actual program itself, because I'm sure there are people that might be listening and might be quite interested to say, okay, fine, you know, Riaz is making a lot of sense right now. You know, I think maybe I've got a future in this thing, but they're now thinking to themselves what their career prospects actually look like. So with that in mind, you know, if someone does become either data scientist, an analyst, a programmer, you know, someone in the courses, what are the median salaries looking like? And, you know, what could a potential career pathway look like?
Sure. Well, our career outcomes are divided into those that are entering their first job. So those are usually matric graduates who come to us and study full time, versus working professionals who are already working in a career and are looking to change into tech. The starting salaries for working professionals is much higher. It ranges from 25 to 50,000 rand a month. And that's because they come in with previous experience, which is valuable. We work with employers that think it's valuable to have somebody who, say, was a designer for 4 years, then took a web development course, and now is interviewing for a front-end developer role. They have the design experience and they have the technical experience, and together makes for a very valuable hire. So that's why you see those type of salaries. For people straight out of matric, you know, there's a variety of options. graduate schemes, internship programs, junior developer roles, where it can range from 10 to 20,000 rand a month starting salary. But the goal there is to progress quickly because you've spent time with Hyperion working on coding every single day, writing code, getting your code reviewed. You may start in a career with somebody who has a computer science degree and in 6 months get promoted more quickly than the other person because that practical ability to code will be seen by your manager. When they look at your code, they'll see, hey, you know, this guy has had his code reviewed, or this girl has an understanding of how to write structured code. They don't teach those things in a computer science degree, but we do.
You know, as you're talking, it's conversations like this that always make me feel like I should have taken things a bit more seriously when I was learning coding back in the day. I might have been on a completely different career path. Maybe zooming out a bit and looking more broadly into the world of edtech, how have you seen the development over time? Because as you said, you guys started off online, whereas the rest of the education sector is now playing a game of catch up with online education. For a long time, online education was in some circles seen as being a bit fringe. But now, because of the necessity, people have actually started to see the value. So from your point of view, do you sort of look at what's happened now and, you know, sort of start feeling like, yeah, okay, fine. We actually took the right decision way back when.
Yeah, I think it's about scalability. I think that practically, South Africa has huge education problems. And to really fix that, you need to have a really scalable solution. Online education scales because you can have 20,000 people on an online learning platform at one time, learning, studying, getting, grading, teaching, learning with their peers, learning one-on-one. But you can't have 20,000 people at a campus doing that at the same time. And that's just a practical reality. So we always knew that online education was the way to scale a solution that would have real impact in South Africa and decided to do that well from day one. COVID has shown, I think, that online education is something that is hard to do well, and it is something that is more accessible when it's done well for practical reasons, but also for economic reasons. And I think that it's important that consumer perception and consumer understanding is evolved. And COVID has helped evolve it faster. The difference between a 200 Rand online course, which is just some videos, and a 50,000 Rand online intensive program that is, you know, comparable or more intense than a degree or diploma, and leads to a very direct career change where you get set up with interviews. I think now people are starting to understand the real tangible difference of the different types of online education.
As you're saying that, the big question that I think might come to people is, how do you deal with the tension between online education being a couple of videos like you've just said for, you know, a cheap course versus the academic rigor that is seen in a university? Because I think that's been one of the big debates for tertiary institutions, for example, that should a person really be paying, you know, 60,000, 70,000, 80,000 rand a year, you know, if all the learning is online? How do you deal and make sure that people have that rigor that they're used to having on campus, firstly? And then the second one is, you mentioned earlier on that you guys have taken care to get some of the best coding teachers that you can. You know, how does that actually feed into that type of situation where you have, let's say, 20,000 people all learning, you know, online? How does that learning experience become valuable for someone who's sitting behind a computer screen for you guys?
Those are great questions. Let me start with the first one around, you know, the intensiveness of the experience. It's actually not really rocket science. I think, just think about when you had a good education experience. When I think back, you know, I did my undergrad degree at a few places. I was at UKZN, I was at Oxford for a bit, I was at Edinburgh, I was at the University of Pennsylvania in America, and I did my master's at Cambridge University. And so I had exposure to a lot of different universities and on-campus experiences. And the thing that I really remember was whenever I worked one-on-one with a teacher or a lecturer, or I had a small tutorial group, or I really got personalized feedback. When you think about teaching and learning, a lot of it is about that human side, you know, sitting with somebody, having your work graded in a way where they write feedback that's really practical, actionable. It's more than just ticks and crosses. And that's really it. That's really what makes education good. It's what makes students inspired, what makes students learn and improve. And this is really important, especially in coding, where things are very nitty-gritty. It's about every line of code and how you can structure a program. So you'll find that, you know, a lot of education providers shied away from that in the early days because it sounds amazing to have millions of users studying with you. But that's not scalable if you can't have hundreds of teachers supporting them. And so over the years, the coding bootcamp model has evolved because those methods were found to be ineffective and the human side was brought in. But coding bootcamps couldn't scale because humans are very expensive, especially people who can teach tech, or they're very hard to find. We actually have an advantage in Africa where we have a huge pool of tech talents that can teach coding if they're helped and if they are structured as a career. And they can do it at a rate that's pretty affordable in a global context. So what we basically did was we said those types of support, a one-on-one mentor call, a tutorial group, a code review on a piece of a student's work, we're going to do that really, really well. And how are we going to do that? We're going to build a huge workforce of reviewers and teachers, and we're going to also build technology that can route those reviews, route those requests to do it in a very smart way. Think of it a bit like Uber. When you call an Uber, it tries to find the most appropriate driver that's nearest to you, that's the right price, that has the right rating, to get it to you, and you can take the Uber, right? We've built technology like that. When you click a button and you want to schedule a one-on-one mentor call, or you want your work graded, we have technology that gets that and then intelligently assigns it to somebody who's going to do it really well, do it really quickly, and do it affordably. And that's how we manage to scale things. So if 500 new students start with us tomorrow, we're actually able to scale that support with them. It's a very hard technical challenge to build a system like that. It's a hard people challenge, but because we've solved it, that's why some leading providers in the US and European markets work with us, because they themselves, with hundreds of millions of dollars in funding, need help to do that well. So I think that probably answers your first question. In terms of your second question, you know, it is about the fact of how much of that you get in a program. If you just measure, you know, in 1 year degree, how many hours of one-on-one support do I get? How many pieces of personalized feedback? We find when we do comparisons, we're doing 5 to 10 to 15 times that in a fully online setting using this technology and this workforce of teachers. And so practically, that's what you pay for. You get that and you get the outcomes that result from having a learning experience that is set up in that way. And online courses that do that are the ones that are intensive, are the ones that are more highly priced, but also the ones that are effective. And students are getting much better at differentiating that.
Well, it certainly sounds like, you know, people are going to have to find ways to, because for me, I think there's also another side to the whole value thing, the attitude of the learner as well. Becomes important, because some people might say, no, I'm not going to learn anything if it's all just behind the screen. Whereas some people, you know, they'll take to the computer like a fish in water, you know. So I think, you know, there's also that piece. But as we end off, what do you make of access to technology? Because I'd say that was one of the big issues about COVID, that was really exposed, the fact that we still have one of those unequal societies where some people do have access to be able to participate in digital education, whereas a large part of the country don't. And, you know, it does sound as if, you know, you guys are trying to address this issue with the scholarships that you guys are offering.
Yeah, I think another reason Facebook funded us in the back in the day was, I don't know if you remember Free Basics, where you could go on Facebook and you could use a lot of websites without any data. So you didn't need 3G or you didn't need money to buy data. We actually still have that functionality. So it is possible to take our courses with limited internet, where our course content is basically compressed and you're able to access it offline and then only sync when you need to get feedback and to submit things. And we still have some students who do that. I think practically we cannot fix, the internet situation in South Africa, but it is getting better. Data costs are getting lower. More access to internet is being expanded. But to answer your question, we built our product in a smart way that allows people to not have to download hundreds of gigabytes of videos and also doesn't require them to necessarily be online all the time with this offline sync functionality.
So that's been it with Riaz Muller, who is the founder and CEO of Hyperion Dev. They are a tech education company that is specializing in equipping skills such as coding, programming, data science. And we're just talking in and around what the edtech space is looking like, and his decision to start the company back in 2012, and the fact that they've been able to develop the system, which he says, developing an effective education system online is not easy at all. But once you have the nuts and bolts in place, you can scale up your business in an effective way where each one of your online learners actually gets the best value out of it. We also just spoke about an impact investing opportunity that they have. They're basically doing a round of crowdfunding at the moment, and as part of that, they're also concurrently doing, offering technology scholarships as well. Also, just talking broadly about education technology, because that's been one of the big things in the last year. We've seen companies such as Vodacom and Naspers, taking big positions in the space, which means that there is a future in this, and it's likely we're going to have a hybrid learning experience in future. So we wait to see what's going to happen, and hopefully we'll be able to catch up with Riaz and his team in future. Riaz, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great day.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
As the world continues to change and we go through and become more comfortable with what people, started calling the new normal, one of the things that really comes into play is the fact that apart from the way that we work, the way that we learn has also, shifted quite fundamentally. Online education, we said it used to be quite fringe. But now I think all of this is now also challenging some of the common notions that we've had about the value of education and what type of education is important. For example, is it really necessary to get a 3 to 4 year degree at a university when you can, go about, upskilling yourself? And the conversations like the one that we had with Riaz, very important, and following one of the trends and conversations that's being had out there to say that perhaps in future a person will not go to university to get a formal degree, for example, but rather a person will attend many short courses along the way and accumulate knowledge as and when they need to know something. So you sort of upskill yourself as you go through your career, as you, climb up in life, and you're able to then switch careers or, quickly upskill yourself by taking a 3 month, a 6 month course. And a lot of it is likely to be driven by what we are seeing online. So I really think what what's being done here with the Hyperion Dev, pretty good. And I think the other thing to see going forward is what is going to be the hyped skill of this decade. I'd say the turn of the century into the 2000s, you know, everyone was talking about you need to be a coder, you need to be a programmer. And then in the last decade, in the 2010s, it was all about data analytics, data science. You know, what can we, you know, what type of insights can we get from the data, big data, the word data was a thing over the last decade. Is data going to continue to be the thing into the 2020s, or are we going to see the emergence of yet another niche area going forward? But otherwise, you know, hoping that everyone has decided in one way or another to upskill themselves. Lots of people have gained skills during this time. And as we said, companies like Vodacom, companies like Naspers, who have been in this game for some time, you know, but sort of more as passion projects, have really started to see increased upticks in the last couple of months. But going forward, that hybrid learning model is likely going to be the way that learning is done going forward, a mixture between the on-campus experience or the physical experience and the online component. And one of the conversations that we're likely to see now is what is the role or what is the relationship between the student and the teacher? We heard Riaz talking a lot about why it's very important to have that one-on-one interaction, but at the same time, there are parts of a course that a person could probably read for themselves. So in the same way that we talk about how retail centers might become experiential in nature, in future we might see educational institutions or places of learning becoming experiential in their own right, that you go to school or you are physically in class just to have, you know, those one-on-one sessions with the teacher. But all of it, we just wait to see where the future goes. But what is certain at the moment is that online education is here. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller, together with Modiehi Mashemaete. I've been Mudiwa Gabaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.